and I'm going to make sure that there will be a wedding here, the likes of which she's never seen in a little more than a week. She sniffed again and grabbed my shirt. It's okay. Hush. She pulled away, and this time I let her. She clutched her hands in her lap and looked to me to be about 10. But maybe that was the way I would always see her. I was consistently surprised whenever she got off a plane and re-entered my life. I always expected her to look like she did whenever she came back from the H.F. Bard Dude Ranch, where she would disappear from us each summer, and she would hit our cramped little rental with the force of a teenage hurricane, generally with a retinue of broken adolescent male hearts in tow. I looked into those gray eyes and could see the reflection of myself, a man who had mislaid some of the most prized moments in his daughter's life. I was ashamed of myself. Pulling my handkerchief from my pocket, I handed it to her. We'll get everything squared away. It's not like we haven't done anything, and we'll get all the details worked out. She nodded and dabbed at her eyes. I've got Lena with me, and she's a wonder. Yep, I know. Her hand went self-consciously to her head and the scar along her hairline, where the surgeons in Philadelphia had opened her skull to allow her brain enough room to swell. And I was momentarily reminded of Lolo Long's scar close to the same location. Katie's eyes drifted past me and over my shoulder, and I turned to find Lena Moretti standing a respectful distance away. Her hands were stuffed in the pockets of her black linen slacks as she pivoted on one heel of a flat-soled shoe. I'm sorry, but I think your food is getting cold. By the time we topped the hill overlooking Lame Deer, regular conversation had been restored. Oh, Daddy, I can't believe you did that. I gave Henry the eye, but he remained silent. It wasn't my choice. A peyote ceremony? Well, I glanced past the Cheyenne Nation's profile at the inordinate amount of unmarked and marked cars, along with a mobile task force trailer emblazoned with the FBI's insignia that were crowded into the small tribal police parking lot. Henry finally spoke. Uh-oh. We slowed at the stop sign, and the bear and I looked at each other. Katie leaned up between us and glanced at the hubbub to our left, her natural Philadelphia lawyer tendencies getting the better of her.
What's happened there?
I'm not sure. She looked at the bear and then back to me.
Well, shouldn't we find out?
I took a deep breath and gestured for the Cheyenne Nation to advance forward. Not my job. Henry didn't move, and someone honked an air horn behind us.
Katie leaned her face close to mine and pointed toward the clock in the ornate chrome-slicked dash. It was almost 3.
You can be a cop for another 18 minutes.
It's okay.
The horn behind us blasted again, and the Cheyenne Nation calmly slipped Lola into park, removed his lap belt, pulled the door handle, and stepped out. I swiveled my head to get a look back, but Katie countered to block my view. Henry and I can just go ahead over to Ashland and get you women into your motel room. There were noises coming from behind the car, including the opening and slamming of a door and loud voices. I redirected my attention to Lena, who was now looking out the back window. And get you settled in. Katie reached up and gripped my chin, redirecting my attention to her, a trick she'd adopted from her mother.
I'd rather you go over and get things settled than have you worry about this case, okay?
There was certainly no noise from the street. I'm not going to worry about it.
Her eyebrows rose to the point where I thought they were going to fall off the back of her head as the bear re-entered the Thunderbird, sat, and reattached his seatbelt. I looked at him.
Sorry about the trouble. He shrugged. What trouble?
He gripped the wheel.
I'm assuming we're making a stop at the jail to see what's going on.
I shot a look at my daughter, who ricocheted to the Cheyenne Nation, who in turn whipped the wheel to the left and blew across the intersection onto the street beside the full lot. I caught a glimpse of a large man behind us, holding his nose in an attempt to stop it from bleeding while leaning against the fender of his 18-wheeler.
No problem, right?
Henry pulled up behind the task force trailer and parked as we opened the doors, and I flipped the seat forward so that the Philadelphia contingency could join us in witnessing the spectacle. Federal agents in flak jackets and full tactical gear were flying out of the adjoining buildings, jumping in the assorted cars, trucks, and SUVs, and making swift departures onto 212 and points beyond. Lolo Long and Cliff Cly were engaged in a heated conversation on the ramp of the tribal police headquarters. Katie and Lena appeared to be enjoying the show. Henry and I looked at each other.
Hopefully we'll be right back.
Katie waved and pointed at her wristwatch.
14 minutes.
I bumped the bear's shoulder. Don't beat anybody else up, okay? We advanced on the ramp as Agent Cly broke from Long and stepped toward us, stopping when he saw me, extending a hand in admonition.
Don't even start.
Have we missed something?
Well, hell yeah.
He looked over both our shoulders.
Nice car. Hey, is that your daughter?
Cliff, what's going on? He looked exasperated.
Listen, I wanted to let your little friend back there handle her end of the log, but it's lumberjack time and we've got fugitives, okay?
What are you talking about?
That moron, Clarence Last Bull, was dealing out of his house and had a wire on his phone.
What?
Yeah, I know. Nobody knew, especially me. I mean, why would you check any of this with the fucking agent in charge, huh?
He pulled a pack of cigarettes from the inside pocket of his suit jacket and bit one between his teeth. I noticed that the stubble on his face was the exact length I'd seen days ago. He probably had an electric razor set to that length.
I swear to God, my title should be Agent Who Doesn't Know What the Fuck Is Going On.
I could see Chief Long advancing as he lit the Marlboro and took a vicious inhale.
To make a long story short, we've got a tape on this asshole from an anonymous informant where Clarence is discussing with Artie Smallsong how he wasn't going to pay him the money he owed him for pushing his wife and kid off the cliff.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. A very heated conversation that ends with an inordinately pissed-off Artie Smallsong promising to turn Clarence Lastbull into the Native American equivalent of Jimmy Dean Hickory Smoked Sausage.
He turned.
Did you know about this?
Chief Long had arrived.
No.
She looked doubtful.
No.
Henry's voice cut through the emotion. Where is Clarence Lastbull? The agent in charge removed the cigarette from his mouth.
That's a good question, and one we wish we had an answer to.
He turned to the young Cheyenne woman.
Chief Long?
His jeep is gone, but somebody spotted it in Bernie.
She added before I could ask.
Red Bernie.
I blew out of breath. Has anybody seen or heard of the whereabouts of Artie? The chief and the AIC answered in unison, no.
What about the maroon truck?
Lolo shook her head.
Up at KRZZ with a little nephew, Nate.
The agent shrugged.
Well, that means the last of the Mohicans is perhaps afoot and possibly easier to capture.
The Cheyenne Nation pursed his lips. Or not.
Cly glanced at Henry, and you could see that even he couldn't underestimate the bear.
I gotta go, but you're all welcome to join in the great manhunt of eastern Montana.
I looked over my shoulder, where Cliff Cly's eyes kept wandering.
No, we've got a wedding to plan.
Is that your wife, Sheriff?
I sighed. No, that is the mother of the groom and of my undersheriff, wife of the chief of detectives north, city of Philadelphia, and I'm sure that if you make a pass at her, he will attempt to turn you into the FBI equivalent of Jimmy Dean Hickory Smoked Sausage.
He spoke as he passed us, going toward a Crown Victoria with a driver in attendance behind the wheel.
Philly's a tough town.
He waved at Lena and Katie, and they waved back.
Never know till you ask.
I turned to look at Lolo Long, who was now conversing with someone by way of the radio attached to her collarbone. You don't look happy. She rogered the call and looked up at me.
Someone just punched a trucker out here on the highway.
She fished her keys from her pocket, aimed the remote at the black SUV, and the vehicle chirped and blinked its lights.
Besides, what have I got to be happy about?
The investigative part of the case is over. Now all you have to do is capture the suspects, one of whom is apparently on foot. I glanced back at the women next to the vintage automobile, where Katie was pointing to her wrist.
Anyway, if I'm betting on who knows the territory best, my money's on you, Chief. I started backing away with Henry following, and she took a step after us. So that's it? I stopped. Excuse me? She folded her arms and looked just as hard as the baking concrete on which she stood.
That's it?
I stepped back toward her, Henry's hand on my arm. There's nothing else to do, Chief. They got him red-handed.
No pun intended.
Henry glanced back at my daughter. Come on, we need to go, for numerous reasons. Long advanced, another step after us.
You were there. You saw how he reacted. Neither of us thought Clarence Laspole did this.
Her head began slowly shaking in disbelief.
You know that.
I made a beseeching gesture with my hands as the bear continued to hold on to me. It's the nature of the business, Lolo. Sometimes we're wrong.
Yeah, right.
Her head turned just a little, her hair moving with her, exposing the sickle-shaped scar. I stood there for a second more and then watched as Lolo Long turned, walked back to her unit, and slammed the driver's side door behind her. She threw the car in gear and laid a strip of rubber on the roadside that would have made Mickey Thompson proud.
Chapter 9. Standing in the dirt lot of the Western 8 Motel in Ashland, Henry and I leaned against the rear quarter panel of Lola, close to 500 pounds of masculinity quaking before 130 pounds of femininity. We tried not to look at each other as Katie stared at the less than a dozen units and pronounced them wanting.
This sucks.
I pushed my hat back, pulled off my Ray-Bans, and glanced around at the run-down convenience store, the abandoned garages across the street, and the general dilapidation surrounding us. We could maybe get some hanging baskets with flowers.
Daddy!
I did what I always did in these types of situations and looked to my Indian, if not so much, scout.
Help.
He thought hard.
There is the Whitetail Cabin in the Custer Forest, up near the Red Shale campground.
She folded her arms and turned and looked at us.
What kind of services are there?
He thought some more.
Porta-potties.
Katie didn't say anything and began nosing a rock in the lot with the front of her turquoise flip-flop.
Are there any other motels?
I glanced at the bear, and he responded quickly, realizing what dire straits we were in.
Colstrip.
I turned and repeated the word to my daughter as if she couldn't hear the Cheyenne Nation from only 10 feet away.
Colstrip. How far is that?
Unwilling to be the bearer of bad tidings, I looked at Henry. He shrugged.
About an hour.
Her eyes stayed steady on us.
What kind of motel?
I am not sure.
A voice rose from behind us as Lena Moretti arrived from the convenience store with a modified six-pack holder containing juices, sodas, and 2 bottles of Rainier beer. What a woman. She handed over the cardboard container as she read from the phone in her hand.
The Super 8 Colstrip is conveniently located in the center of Colstrip, Montana, is AAA rated. Property features 40 rooms, superstart breakfast, wireless high-speed internet, interior corridors, large vehicle parking, pets welcomed guest laundry, fishing lake within short walking distance, and Subway restaurant is next door.
She slipped the 2 bottles of beer out and handed them to us.
Drink up, boys. I think you're going to need it.
Henry nodded solemnly as he twisted one open for me so that I wouldn't argue, and then unscrewed the one for him, tapping the next together.
It's 4:20 somewhere.
Lena's cell phone rang, and I recognized Donna Immobile from Rigoletto and smiled. She looked at the phone in her hand.
Not a number I recognize.
She hit a button and held the device to her ear. Hello? A moment passed, and she grinned, holding the phone out.
It's for you.
I looked at her, rather puzzled, and held it up to my own ear.
Hello?
Are you still on the fucking res?
Yep.
I listened as my undersheriff repositioned herself somewhere in Omaha.
Do you know how many people are trying to find you?
I glanced at Lena and, a little ways away, Katie.
Well, two of them found me. Good, then you're their problem now. The phone went dead in my hand. I smiled and handed it back to Lena as Henry watched me. Business. After an embarrassing pause, Lena ran a hand through her almost black hair and continued. There's also the Fort Union Inn, with 20 rooms and within walking distance of downtown Colstrip, which I'm sure will be a comfort to the young Philadelphians, and the Lakeview Bed and Breakfast with 9 rooms, more than half of which face the lake, which will be good for the Brahmins. Katie took a fruit juice and unscrewed the top as she spoke to Lena. You have the list? In my head, we need 73 rooms in all. She immediately dialed the phone in her hands. I thought about the chances of getting all the rooms during the height of tourist season, but kept the thought to myself. Hi, is this a Super 8 Colstrip? She began walking away as Katie came in closer. Next is the venue. What's the hang-up with that?
Arbutus Little Bird, the librarian over at the college.
Henry continued,
It would appear that the college is having a language immersion workshop at Crazy Head Springs on the date of your wedding. Lonnie, your father and I have all tried to talk to her about it, but she is a battle-axe of a woman and is not giving any inches. We explained that we have had the date reserved now for months and that you have your heart set on the place, but nothing.
Katie's eyes sharpened, and she began walking back and forth, almost as if she were deliberating in front of a jury, her flip-flops stirring up tiny clouds of dust as she paced. And this Arbutus works at the library?
Yes.
Will she be there today?
It's a Sunday, so I'm not sure, Katie.
I'll take care of it, Dad. She sipped her juice, and I took the time to study her. For the first time, noticing the pre-perfection of her tan. Not hiding the faintly visible Cheyenne turtle tattoo at her shoulder, her nails, and even the golden streaks in her otherwise auburn hair. Thank goodness she'd gained some weight back after the accident, and the rehab in the gym had transmogrified into a twice-a-day regimen. I was pretty sure my daughter was in the best shape she'd ever been in her life.
You're beautiful.
Katie turned to flick her eyes at me. Thanks, Dad. She looked embarrassed and quickly changed the subject. Where's the list?
What?
The list you mentioned in the car. There's a list of questions that need answers. My voice fell.
Oh, hell.
What?
I left it with Lolo Long's mother at Health Services.
She sighed. Where's that?
Where we just left, Lame Deer.
Then we have to go back. Lena returned, sorted through the drinks, and took a Diet Coke for herself. 37 rooms at the Super 8, all 20 at the Fort Union, and 8 rooms available, including the suites at the Lakeview B&B. Turning, she looked at the 10 units of the Western 8 Motel and spread her arms like Moses discovering the Promised Land. And rooms to spare. She chugged her pop and redeposited the bottle in the holder. Katie looked at Lena. I think we're going to want to take a look at the rooms in Colstrip, and I want to talk to that librarian. She turned to Henry. We need a car. He spread his own arms.
Yours to command.
Do you still have that shitty truck? He reacted as if he'd been smacked.
I do.
Good, run us over to Lame Deer, drop us off, and then go get Rez Dog. She ran her hands along the glossy flanks of the Thunderbird's fins and grinned. We're taking Lola. We dropped the ladies off in downtown Lame Deer, where they were first going to attempt to take on Arbutus Little Bird. Then they would meet us at Health Services, where they would abscond with Henry's pride and joy for a jaunt up to Colstrip to check out the lodgings. I wished them luck in all of this, especially with the conversation with Lonnie's sister, and accompanied Henry so that I could drive the Thunderbird back to Lame Deer. I'd turned on the radio in Lola and was trying to drive the wedding complications from my mind by listening to Nate Small's song firing up the afternoon drive with, of all things, Gene Autry's Sioux City Sue.
Is this what they usually play on KRZZ? The old people are the ones at home in the afternoons, so they play the classics, drumming and traditional in the mornings, with a little rock thrown in, Cheyenne language programs around noon, and old cowboy and big band music for the shut-ins.
He waited a while before he spoke again, lazily drifting the big square bird down BIA-4.
You do not think Clarence did it?
Well, evidently he hired Artie. The Cheyenne Nation made a face.
What?
He considered his words and pushed his sunglasses up on his nose.
It takes a special kind of person to do this type of thing. To take money to kill a woman and child.
You don't think Artie's capable? He adjusted the sun visor.
Capable, yes. Willing, no.
Have you ever met him?
I have.
He settled in his seat. He smiled, and I figured I was going to get the story.
I met him when I was 15. It was during Crow Fair, and I was doing a little teenage teepee creeping. There was a girl I was infatuated with, and she had some brothers. We stayed out a little late, and when we got back, the brothers were waiting for us. I fought all three, one at a time. Crow tradition. The Crow are good that way. The Lakota would wait with a half dozen guys, and they would all jump on you.
What happened?
He shrugged. They went and got a friend, and it was Artie. I was pretty beat up, and I remember when I saw him that I thought this was probably going to be a good fight.
He stretched his jaw muscles at the thought of it.
You remember when we used to play ball?
We seemed to have changed conversations, but I answered,
yep. You were a lineman, so you know better than me, but do you remember lining up across from those guys who didn't have any imagination? Nothing to distract them from the job at hand.
I laughed and thought about Lolo Long's prejudice against imagination. My father used to call it constructive stupidity. I got accused of it a lot in my teenage years. He nodded.
Artie was like that. No imagination. Utterly focused. I think he might never have outgrown that behavior.
Who won?
His face hardened as he thought.
It was kind of a draw.
We drove past the dirt road cutoff and the rumpled hills leading to the painted warrior's multicolored face, and my mind began playing the scenarios over in my head. If Clarence had been there, why did he hire Artie to do the deed? Why wouldn't he have been as far away from the actual killing as possible? Maybe they were both there, Clarence to get them to the cliff, and Artie to push them over. So you don't think either one of them did it? He smiled.
No, I do not think Artie did. And you do not think Clarence did.
So who did?
Someone who is highly motivated.
He shifted in the seat and looked at me.
For the sake of your familial life, I am advising you to drop this.
We drove on, but my mind raced ahead. We saw her die.
Yes.
I nodded my head and turned my face back to the window. It's not my case.
No.
We've got a wedding to help organize.
Yes.
I turned the radio back up, and we drove in silence until the words tumbled from my mouth. But I'd like to hear those tapes. Would you like to hear those tapes?
Yes.
I think we can arrange that, don't you? I nodded my head some more. I mean, it can't hurt to just listen to them, right?
Yes.
I paused and then glanced at him.
Yes, it can't hurt, or yes, it can.
He seemed to be considering the possibilities for a long time, and it was only when I was ready to ask again that he turned to look at me.
Yes.
I refused to drive Resdog, but was happy enough to mosey along behind the patched-together vehicle in Lola. We parked in the lot at Health Services, and I noticed Henry nudged the 3/4-ton tire against one of the concrete curbs so that we wouldn't have a repeat demolition derby. When we got inside, Hazel Long was once again at her station. The chief was nowhere to be seen, but her younger brother, Barrett, was, and considering how much his sister did not like the Cheyenne Nation, I was surprised by the smile with which he greeted Henry. "The bear!" His mother shushed him, but he stepped up to Henry and pumped his arm like a derrick. "My man!" he smiled at me. "This your cowboy sidekick?" I took off my sunglasses, seeing no reason to stay incognito.
"That's me."
He placed a hand on the Cheyenne Nation's shoulder. "You ever hear about the U.S. Army Recruitment Expeditionary Basketball Tournament in Billings? It was a 3-man, and we were a man short, so the bear here steps up in street shoes
and scores 9 3-pointers to win the tourney.
He shook his right hand as if it were on fire. Burn!
Is your sister around?
Nope, she's out shaking the bushes for Artie Smallsong.
He glanced back to Henry. Hey, did you really punch a truck driver?
I noticed the bear had left his wayfarers on. Obviously, he was still attempting anonymity.
I leaned against the counter.
Mrs. Long.
Hazel.
I nodded. About the list of drugs from the bracelet? That's going to take a while. That patient file would be in the physical archives, and I haven't had a chance to get down there.
Well, when you come up with that information, you can give it to your daughter.
I leaned in closer.
Hazel, did you by any chance save that list I had you copy down concerning my daughter's wedding?
She looked surprised.
I gave it to her.
Katie was already here?
They're still here. She said she wanted to see your dog, and I let them into Adrian's room.
I glanced at Henry. I'll be right back.
I gently pushed open the door and could see Lena Moretti standing on one side of the crib and my daughter sitting in a chair with dog's head in her lap, the baby clutching her forefinger as he slept. Once again, she had tears in her eyes, and I watched as the trunk of her body shuddered with her breath. She looked up at me.
He's so small.
I joined them at the foot of the crib.
They start out that way.
Her eyes were drawn back to the sleeping child.
He's all right?
That's what the doctors say, a few bumps and scrapes, but evidently she was able to protect him from the bulk of the impact.
I leaned over and looked down at the lone survivor.
She died?
Yep.
But there's a father?
Yes, but he's been implicated.
The FBI says they have tapes of him negotiating with another man about killing both mother and child.
Lena Moretti's voice sighed from the other side of the crib.
My God!
It's all pretty sordid. I dropped my voice when I saw Adrian roll his head to one side. We should probably get out of here.
Katie stood and then whispered,
What about Dog?
He doesn't really want to leave. He's the one that found him.
The two women joined me at the foot of the crib.
We saw them fall and got to the woman, Audrey, as quickly as we could. But Adrian here had rolled down the hill, bundled up in a blanket, and Dog found him.
I moved them toward the door, but Katie balked.
Wait a minute. Did you say you saw them fall? You mean you were actually there?
I cracked open the door, but she still didn't move. We were researching another area for the wedding and happened to be below when they fell. I even had Henry's camera.
Which reminds me.
Lena looked up. What?
Nothing. I scooted the two of them out.
How did the meeting with Arbutus Little Bird go?
Katie answered, preoccupied. She'll be there tomorrow morning and we'll meet with her then.
Well, Lonnie says to bring a gun.
Henry met us at the counter, and we moved as a group to the parking lot where he dangled the keys above Katie's hand. He dropped, she caught, and we started moving to our neutral vehicles.
Daddy?
Yep.
She steered me aside, placing her arm through mine and walking me away from both Henry and Lena.
What if I had something that would solve this woman's murder, and I didn't use it? That'd be pretty bad, wouldn't it?
I suppose.
Unwilling to look me in the eye, she lowered her head, and I stood there staring at the strands of gold, auburn, and strawberry blonde, a combination that became more evident in the summertime. Her voice echoed against my chest.
What if I knew a way to make sure whoever killed Audrey Laspole would be brought to justice?
I'd say that there's no such thing as a sure thing. The eyes came up slow but sharp.
I would.
She rose up on tiptoes and kissed the grizzle on my chin, then pirouetted away with the keys dangling between her fingers.
Lena and I will spend the night up in Colstrip, but we'll meet you for lunch here tomorrow at noon.
I watched her sashay over to the Thunderbird, and the two of them climbed in, fired Lola up, and roared away like a High Plains Thelma and Louise. As I stood there watching them turn left and head north, The Cheyenne Nation rejoined me.
So, what just happened?
I breathed a soft laugh. Unless I'm mistaken, we just got put back on the case. Henry drove us over to the law enforcement center, but the place was vacant and the door was locked. Lolo Long's cell number was listed on the door as one of the emergency contact numbers, but I figured we'd just go do a little snooping on our own.
What makes you think he is with Inez Tutu? Inez's mother told me that Clarence was having an affair with her daughter a while back, and if Clarence is involved, then she might be a good place to start looking for him. If she doesn't know where he is, then she might have other ideas where we could look.
The bear drove down Main Street and took a right toward the high school gym, which remained open on Saturdays and Sundays in conjunction with the Boys and Girls Club. We parked the ugliest truck on the high plains next to the outside basketball courts with their chain nets and cratered asphalt and walked in down the hall to the unlocked doors of the gym. I could see why the bear had had no doubts as to Inez's whereabouts. The place was packed with young people.
So this is the place to see and be seen?
The Cheyenne Nation snatched a worn ball from the rack just as a fat man with a whistle was about to yell at him.